Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
this is Learn to Kick Fear with Low.
Take action.
Learn how internet marketers, real estate investors, and other entrepreneurs are overcoming their fears and making it happen and being successful.
You know she's got the 411.
It's time to kick those fears to the curb with Low right now.
Right now. Right now.
What is going on, everybody? Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of my podcast, Take Action Real Estate Investing with Low. Man, do I have a fantastic interview that I'm doing today with a very special guest. And before I introduce him, I just want to thank you guys again. Never can thank you enough for reaching out to me, for giving me your input, your suggestions, and also showing love on a lot of different podcasts and guests that I've had, and how the information has helped you. That is the main purpose of my podcast and these interviews. So again, thank you very much. Remember to like and share and comment for the podcast as well as the interview. Again, I greatly appreciate it. And as you can see here, we have a special guest. His name is Mr. Scott Freebarn. He is going to talk about DFW multifamily, the outlook, how you can get started. This is something that I've been passionate about as far as multifamily over the last several years. I met Scott, I had the pleasure of meeting Scott at one of the local real estate investor groups, the LSREIG, maybe about 5 or 6 years ago, I think, Scott. But it's always been a pleasure. I've learned a ton from him. I actually reached out to him about a year ago to reconnect with him and asked him to mentor me. So I've been going through learning multifamily with him, and it's a different beast than single family that I've come to learn, but man, is it more rewarding. And for those of you that have questions on how to get started with multifamily investing, and also those of you that are looking to passively invest, man, you definitely want to tune in and listen at this particular interview. And without further delay, I want to go ahead and introduce Scott. Scott, thank you so much for taking the time and welcome.
Hey, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Awesome. Awesome. And if you don't mind, I'll go ahead and just jump right in before you get started with your presentation, or I'll just kind of let you go with the flow. If you want to go ahead and share with everyone, you know, a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in multifamily, then I'll go ahead and turn it over to you.
Okay, that sounds great. Well, I can tell you that I wasn't born with a spoon in my mouth. I started like most people start, you know, broke and not able to pay the bills and wanting something better. Let me just, this call. Hold on 1 second, sorry.
Okay.
So, you know, like everyone, I was out there looking at an opportunity to see what I could do to help better provide for my family. So this started back in the day. So I started investing in 1995. Now, probably some of you weren't born then. I'm just kidding. But I started in Bakersfield, California, of all places. The one of the few places on earth you can actually see the air before you breathe it. So that was a great opportunity for me. The reason why I started investing in Bakersfield is because that's where I lived. So, you know, my my point with everyone is invest, you know, if you're, especially if you're going to be an active participant in real estate, you got to be there. We're going to talk about an opportunity where you can actually invest in multifamily passively. And in my opinion, it's a lot better. You'll be able to sleep better at night. I can promise you that.
Yes.
There'll be professionals that'll be handling the property for you, and you won't have to learn this profession. So I started in 1995. My first property was a fourplex. You know, I didn't earn a lot of money. I was making 12 something an hour, and I had more months left over at the end of my money, of course. And I am a veteran of the Navy. Never again volunteer yourself. So
thank you for your service.
I was able to buy a fourplex with a dollar, and I could afford that. So I was able to do that. I figured, well, hey, you know what? If I buy a fourplex and a couple people move out, well, then, hey, I still got a couple people living there that can pay the mortgage payment. So, you know, because I couldn't pay my own mortgage payment, so I had to have, you know, this security. So I started right into multifamily. I didn't start with single family. So I bought my first fourplex, and in 1995 in Bakersfield, California, it was a buyer's market, not a seller's market like it is today. I was able to buy almost $1.5 million of real estate that year. It doesn't seem like a lot of money in today's dollars, but back then I remember buying a threeplex and the roof leaked. And the guy basically said, look, you know, I got one tenant in there. The guy's driving me nuts. I'll pay you $5,000 to take it. So I'm thinking to myself, well, hey, you know, $5,000, that's like 2 months income for me. So, you know what? I figure I could, you know, even if it takes me 2 months to figure out how to repair a roof, that's still worth my while. So, I bought it, held on to it for 10 years and sold it for a nice profit. But that's kind of where I was in 1995. And I learned how to earn $10,000 a month income. And at the end of those first 10 years, I, in 2005, I sold everything I had in Bakersfield, and did a 1031 exchange into another, property in, Dallas, Texas, and ended up with a couple million dollars, in my bank account, which, it was life changing, from a guy who was making 12, something an hour. I don't even remember. So long ago, I don't even remember how much I made. I know it wasn't enough. And like I said, I know there was more month at the end of my money, but it just blew me away. I just can't tell you, you know, it was just life changing. Awesome. So currently, I use buy, hold, buy, reposition, and sell strategies to earn six figures a year. In my career, I've purchased 432 units. Works out to be about 19.6 units a year. Last year we sold a 32 units in Fort Worth. We bought it for around $15,000 per door. Sold it for $30,000 a door less than 24 months later. Didn't have to put a lot of rehab into it, but the thing is the gentleman that owned it was living in New York, so he was out of state. He had a so-called, okay, professional property management company managing it. They had 9 vacancies. So with 32 units and 9 vacancies, you're not going to cash flow. And he became a motivated seller. We had to close quickly. We had to pay all cash. But it was an opportunity that we were able to take advantage of. And I can tell you in the multifamily business, management is everything.
Yes.
Management will make you or break you. We're currently doing a rehab on 116 unit complex east of the Metroplex, which is about 32 miles from downtown Dallas, in a tertiary market, meaning it's a small town. But we'll talk about this property a little later.
Okay.
So this is basically me. This has kind of been my experience with multifamily. I would love for this to be your experience. You know, I'm just a normal guy, just was able to, you know, to have this opportunity. So one of the things that I look at when I do multifamily is I look at the market. How is multifamily doing? Because how the market is doing, it determines your strategies, how you're going to go about buying another multifamily.
Now, Scott, let me ask you a question.
And again, let me ask go ahead.
I don't mean to interrupt, but sure. One of the things that you've said and that I researched as well is that the beautiful thing about multifamily is that even in a good or bad market, it's still an excellent investment. But like you were about to share, it just depends on your strategy. You just have to make sure the strategy is appropriate for the market. Is that correct?
Yes, your strategy has to be appropriate. But what that guarantees is that you're able to pull the trigger and buy a property, but you have to also make sure that the property is cash flowing. So never speculate, never buy a property that's not cash flowing, thinking that it's going to increase in value. Texas is a different animal than California or Nevada, where I've also, you know, bought and sold properties. There is unlimited land here. It's not like, you know, Las Vegas, Nevada, is surrounded by mountains, surrounded by the military, you know, proving grounds. And California, you know, half you go west and you're in the ocean, you know.
Yes.
So, and there's not an unlimited supply of land. So the dynamics are different. So you have to kind of know what those dynamics are and what that allows you to do. And you can't buy property here with the same strategy or the same expectation in, you know, buying a property in California or Nevada, so to speak. And it might be the same way on the East Coast. You know, I'm just not familiar. You know, I just haven't bought anything on the East Coast. So okay. I'm more of a Western United States kind of guy. So, but anyway, the most important thing is that you understand that each market is different and you got to know what those differences are, because in this business, what you don't know will turn around and bite you in the rear end. So what you don't know will hurt you. So it's really important to make sure that when you go into an investment, you understand all of the risk and all of the rewards clearly, so that you can make the best possible choice for yourself. So let's talk about the Dallas-Fort Worth market right now and what's going on here. And it's actually very similar in a lot of other places. There may be some differences. So we're going to get right into that right now. So if you look at the number one thing, there's 13 different dynamics that we look at when we analyze an area to invest in. And the number one dynamic is job creation. So if you look right now at job creation around the country, Dallas, Plano, Irving, it's number two, mm-hmm. You know, just second only to New York, you know, the East Coast up there. So
strong.
This is just in one year, this area has created over 70,000 jobs. And you can see Houston is number three. Mm-hmm. So Texas is a job creating machine right now. And actually, if you go to Texas A&M, they have a real estate center. This is what they said, that the Texas economy has grown faster than any state at 5.2% in the fourth quarter of 2017. So our economy is expanding, and because it's expanding, we are, you know, the jobs are being created so that we can handle that expansion.
Right.
And, you know, Texas is an oil, it's a big oil state, and oil right now is doing really well.
Yes.
So this right here is a graph of, well, okay, so we know that there's jobs being created. So what does that mean? Well, it means that people are moving here. You know, 682 people are moving here every day. So what does that mean? Well, that means they got to live somewhere. They're going to maybe be in a hotel for short term, but they've got to settle into their job, and then they've got to look around the neighborhood, and they're either looking for a house to buy, or they're either renting a house, or, you know, they're going to rent an apartment. And that's basically one of the reasons why I like multifamily, is because it's a service that you are basically providing housing for, you know, providing a basic need for society. So our occupancy rate right now is 94.21%. You can see the average rental rate. You can see the construction starts, the deliveries, and the absorption. Mm-hmm. So absorption really means demand. So you've got your supply, which is the delivered units, and you have your demand. And as long as the absorption and the deliveries or the supply are equal or close to equal, your occupancy rate is not going to change that much.
Okay.
So supply and demand determine occupancy or your vacancy. So if the supply is really high and the absorption is not catching up, you're going to have more vacancies. It's really important. How do we make money in multifamily? We make money by renting units. Mm-hmm. If we have a vacant unit, we're losing money. Now, you can talk about the other 15 different ways to make money with multifamily, your late charges, your pet fees, your pet rent, your vending machines, and there's a bunch of ways. But none of that compares to your rent. Your rent is your biggest, vacancy. It's a big cost. So renting a unit that's how you maximize your money, is you rent units. So it's very important when you go into an area to understand where occupancy is headed. Is it going up? Is it going down? If the occupancy rate's going down, you could be in trouble if you don't have a little bit of wiggle room in your, when you're looking at a property and you're analyzing the numbers, and you don't give, if you're too conservative on your numbers and you don't have any wiggle room in there and your occupancy changes, you could be in trouble. Gotcha. You could become a motivated seller because, you're all of a sudden you have a negative cash flow.
Right.
So this is a dynamic. You really have to pay attention to the occupancy, and the occupancy is directly affected by the supply and demand. And in Dallas, you've got 20,000 units that are being constructed. So we've got 9,800 starts. But, what's going on with, what do they have that's already being worked on? And when are those units are going to come online? So right. You have to see what's in the funnel. But again, it's important to realize there are different classes of multifamily properties.
Right.
So based on the age or based on where they're located, you've got an A property that's pristine, brand new. These are A properties. So this is kind of a different market than, say, a B or C or D property. A D property would be located in a war zone.
In the hood.
You don't want to live there. Yeah. Yep. So you don't want to live there. But a B property would be more of a mix with blue collar and white collar workers, and then a C property would be a solid blue collar, neighborhood.
Gotcha.
And each class of property has different advantages. For instance, an A property will appreciate a lot more than a C property. Mm-hmm. So a C property would be advantageous for cash flow. They have a very steady cash flow, but they're the only way you can actually increase their value is to either increase the rents, over the years slowly, or to try to reposition it, which is what we're doing with our East Dallas property or East Texas property, is we're turning it from a C property and getting it up to a B property and changing the dynamic of our renters.
Right. Well, I'm
so
glad that,
making it more.
I just wanted to ask you, for those that's listening and may be curious to know, out of those classes of properties, which one do you mainly focus on when you're going to invest and buy a property?
So we focus on B and C properties.
Right.
And the ideal or the perfect wave or perfect curl or whatever you want to call it is getting a C property and rehabbing it into a B property. Mm-hmm. Because you can really raise the rents and really maximize, really raise the value.
Gotcha.
So that's one of the differences. If you're a single family person, then that's really one of the big differences between single family and multifamily is with single family, your value is determined by comps.
Yes.
With multifamily, the value is determined by the NOI, which is a net operating income. So you increase the income of a property, you increase its value.
Yes.
Now, how much does that value increase? That depends on what is called a cap rate or a capitalization rate, which is a big word, okay? And all it basically means is the thing about multifamily is every multifamily property is different. It's not like single family where they build a whole tract of single family houses. And so the comps, you know, pretty much can tell you what the value is. With multifamily, they're crazy. There are different number of units, different unit mixes, like the bedrooms are different, the amenities are different. So it's hard to compare using comps. So what happens is when a property is sold and we get a comp from multifamily, the value is taken from the NOI, and the NOI tells you kind of what your return is going to be on that property. So a cap rate simply means, in layman's terms, if I bought a property for $1 million and I received a 7% return, that would be my cap rate for that property. So the return that you get on your money is the cap rate. So if it was an 8% cap rate, I get an 8% return, 7% cap rate. So the lower the cap rate, the less you're going to earn from that property. And it means that the price is going to be higher. Okay, so, and if you look at A, B, C, D properties, you'll know that the cap rates of each one of those are different. So you might be looking at an A property, the cap rate might be between 4.5% and 5.5%, because it's a brand new property, you're paying a lot of money for it. So you would expect your return to be less. Okay. With a B property, go ahead.
Okay, didn't mean to interrupt. I just, you know, again, I'm just thinking. No,
interrupt me anytime. I got children and grandchildren.
Used to it.
Oh, and a wife. I got a wife. But she's privileged. She can do whatever she wants.
She can do whatever she wants. That's right. And no grandbaby. But so for people that's listening and, you know, have, you know, money aside in a self-directed IRA or in some type of savings account or mutual funds account, and they're interested in investing in a multifamily deal for passive income, what is a good cap rate? What is the standard cap rate that they should, you know, look for as far as returns?
Well, when you're dealing with, well, you want to get the highest.
Right.
Interest, you know, you want to maximize, you know, the highest interest rate you can earn. That's what you want.
Right.
That's kind of why we deal with B properties and C properties, because we're going to get a better cash flow, and, you know, cash is king. We want cash flow.
Yep.
There's usually, in every property that we do, there's two things you got to look at. One is you have to look at the cash flow, because you have to be able to, at least every year, receive some kind of return on your money. You don't want to wait 10 years down the road until the property is sold to get some kind of a return. So you want to get a return.
Yeah. Okay.
That's the cash flow return. Okay. Yes. And that happens every 3 months. We send out the checks. Okay. Mm-hmm. But the other return is going to be the appreciation.
Right.
And that's going to be added to your overall return. So, for instance, if your cash on cash return is an average over 5 years of 10%, and then when you sell the property in 5 years, or, you know, between 5 and 10 years, however the market, you know, whenever the market dictates, because we want to be able to sell it really at the peak of the market, and it say it's another 10% over 5 years. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that means your investment now is a 20% investment.
Yes,
but you're not receiving it, you know, every 3 months. You're getting the cash flow on a quarterly basis, and then you also get that nice bonus at the end of the term.
Absolutely.
So that's kind of how multifamily works.
Yeah. So powerful. Sorry about that. Yeah, it's so powerful. It's so powerful. Anyway, I wanted you to kind of break that down a little bit for people that's listening. And
we like to talk about these metrics, because we want you to know. We are, as far as the SEC is concerned, when we talk to you about investing in a multifamily deal, it is a security. Okay. Mm-hmm. And because it's a security, we are required to do certain things so that we stay out of the orange pajamas. Okay. And even though orange is my favorite color, I don't want to be in an orange jumpsuit. Okay.
No.
But anyway, So we need to make sure that you understand what's going on with this investment. When you understand multifamily, you become a sophisticated investor. Yes. As a sophisticated investor, we can work with you and your investment dollars to help you to earn a return. There's also another designation by the SEC. I just slipped my mind. Accredited investor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
An accredited investor is a specific term where they are earning over their net worth is over $1 million, or they're earning as a single individual is over 250,000 a year, or as a couple 350,000 a year. And that when you reach those types of financial dynamics, basically, you become a accredited investor. And the SEC figures, well, if you're making that kind of money, then, you know, you're on your own. If you understand it or you don't understand it, that's on you because you're an accredited investor. But, you know, obviously our focus is on transparency and being able to make sure that when you look at the deals that we have available, that you understand the deal and that you know what you can earn. Of course, there's risk, but we want to define what those risks are so that you are, you know, aware of what you're getting yourself into.
Absolutely.
And well, so,
you have your beautiful family, your wife, your kids, and your beautiful grandkids. Yeah, you're going to do everything the right way so you don't be in that orange jumpsuit. No.
You got that one right. And as I get older, I just want to enjoy them more. So.
Yes.
So anyway, when we go into an area, you know, we're looking at that occupancy rate. We're looking at supply and demand, and we want to know where that's going before we, you know, purchase a property.
Sure.
So this is some of the things that we're looking at.
Awesome.
So in the DFW area, this is basically a chart that shows you how our occupancy is mm-hmm. and what the rents have been doing. So right now, being in a seller's market, we have to really look at where the rent is going and where the rent is and the current rent that a certain property is charging. So if we see a huge opportunity to raise the rents, and there's a lot of people, and I for one have experienced this, when you own a property and you're not sophisticated, you maybe did it like I did it, where, you know, by the sweat of your brow, you got into it and you're owner managing it. Mm-hmm. You don't tend to raise rents. You tend to focus more on not having any vacancies versus raising rents, because when you raise rents, you take the risk of people moving out. Mm-hmm. Now, normally when we raise rents, we don't raise rents that much. We usually try to raise them twice a year, and we normally don't raise them more than $20-$25 at a time, because we don't want a mass exodus from our properties. So that's kind of, you know, that's kind of the give and take when it comes to raising rents. But you can see from 2010 on this chart to 2018, the rent on average has gone from $808 up to $1,148. That's going to create some huge value in your property by doing that. You can see from the peak of 2014 down to 2016, you can see that the occupancy pulled back a little. But how much did it pull back? You're looking at 96, you know, 95.5% down to, you know, 95%. I mean, it's not that much. It's less than a percentage rate, which is nothing really. But if you look at the light blue rectangles, you see that even though the occupancy went down by a percent, so it pulled back a little, the rents kept on going up. Mm-hmm. So when I see the rents going up continuously, even though we see the vacancy or the occupancy going down a little bit, this is nothing. This doesn't mean anything. Now, if I saw the rent start going down, then okay, now we've got a situation here. But this is, you know, we're talking the last 8 years, the market has been increasing every year in rents. So one of the things that we're looking for now is we're looking for properties that have low rents, and we know that we can get in there we can rehab the units and we can raise the rents, you know, $100 or $200 a unit. That right there will really help us to what I call force the appreciation, you know, up substantially. Mm-hmm. And we may have to pay up front for that appreciation before we even make the repairs and actually do the increases. That's just a part of a seller's market. But you have to be able to know with a market survey, which is one of the things that we do in an area, is we will go and look at every single unit close to the property that we want to buy to see where their rents are, so we know what the market rents are, so that we know how much we can actually raise the rents, you know, in that area.
Right.
So rental increases are extremely important. And again, we're really focused on the occupancy and where it's going.
Okay.
So here's another dynamic. This is about apartment sales. So right now, in the first quarter of 2018, we have had a 50% increase in apartment sales.
That's crazy.
Strong. This is, I don't even know if it's unprecedented. It's just crazy.
It is.
What does that tell you? That tells you we're in a seller's market. It's very simple. Mm-hmm. And so there's going to be a lot of competition. There's a lot of sales. There's going to be a lot of competition. Mm-hmm. So we have to have all of our ducks in a row. When we, you know, I've been in the Dallas-Fort Worth area since 2006. So that's 12 years. I have a reputation.
Yes.
If I go out and I make a bunch of offers on properties and I'm able to win an offer because these guys know me and know I pull the trigger, and I get a property under contract and I don't pull the trigger, that hurts my reputation. So it's the advantage for you is that when you look for people to do business with, you look for people who have a reputation, a good reputation, okay?
Yes. Yes.
Not a bad reputation.
Right.
If they know how to pull the trigger and they know how to make a profit, then your dollars are going to be less at risk than working with someone who is just learning the ropes, okay?
Right. Yes.
So we got a phenomenal amount of sales going on. And this is also something really, looks like a bunch of squiggly lines on a piece of paper. I want to point to GSE, that stands for Government Sponsored Entity.
Okay.
That is Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. So Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are loans that the government gives us. And as you can see, after 2016, they are the number one lender. So last July, I was able to get one of these. It was a Fannie Mae loan.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime you're dealing with the government, I kind of felt like I was back in boot camp getting my physical. It seemed like they were touching financial areas that I didn't want them to touch. But, you know, they're very thorough in what they do, and they have a lot of money.
But you had all your ducks.
And this is what's...
Yeah, that's the beauty.
I had my ducks in a row.
And that's why...
Yeah, I can tell you...
As a mentor, yes.
This much paperwork, okay?
Yeah.
But yes, I had my ducks in a row. You're going to have someone on your team. Whenever you do a multifamily deal, you have to have someone on your team that can get the loan.
Yes.
The great thing about that is with multifamily is the GSE is bringing you 75% there. So all you need is 25% to land a deal.
Yep.
So it's nice to be in a country that is getting us 75% there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as long as, of course, the person that they're looking at, it qualifies.
Right.
So, but the number, the amount of sales would not be possible without money.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see back in 2006, okay, the squiggly lines were pretty low.
Mm-hmm.
That meant that money was scarce.
Okay.
When money is scarce, it's hard to buy property.
Right.
When money is abundant, it's easier to buy a property. As a matter of fact, my loan was $3.3 million.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, for some of you, that might, man, that is a that is a lot of money. But the Fannie Mae, they called that a small loan.
Don't change. Yep.
That is in their small multifamily loan. And I'm telling you right now, and you might think I'm crazy, it's easier to borrow $10 million or $20 million than it is to borrow less than $5 million. Yeah. So up to $5 million is considered a small multifamily loan. And those lenders out there like Arbor, they don't want to mess around with a small loan. They want to do those big, you know, those double-digit million-dollar loans, not the small fry.
Yeah.
Not the small fry, okay? So even though if you're doing a $5 million loan, you're still a small fry compared to what's going on out there. But it was just really interesting to me. So there's a lot of money out there to loan. There's a lot of sales going on. And one of the things that's usually not mentioned is the cool thing about a seller's market is there's a lot of people out there that may not have wanted to sell their property. And because of the dynamics and how crazy the market is right now, they're willing to put their property on the market. Mm-hmm. So that's why there are a lot of listings, because people are saying, hey, I can really make some money. Mm-hmm. Back in 2005, when I was in Bakersfield and I was earning $10,000 a month, I was fine. I was happy. I was earning more money than I'd ever earned in my entire life. Or even more money than anybody I knew was making in their entire life. You know, I'm from a blue collar, you know, mentality and background. That's my background. So I wasn't looking to sell. For me, it was a cash cow and I was going to sit on it until I died. And then a guy walked up to me and said, hey, did you know you can sell this property? Well, yeah, I know I can sell it, but for how much? Well, how much did you buy it for? $910,000. Well, I can get you a buyer right now for $2.6 million. And I'm thinking, well, you know, I only owe about $600,000 on this right now. What do I do? So I thought, and then he talked to me about it. Well, you take $2 million, you go buy a bigger property is what you do.
Awesome.
So the property that I had was a 34 unit, 5001 Apple Blossom Drive, Bakersfield, California, 933. Oh, what's the zip code? 08. Oh, no. I don't remember. Anyway, I think shoot, I better look that up. Anyway, so I decided, you know what, I'm going to sell it. And that's exactly what's happening right now. You've got, and this is the beautiful part, you've got people out there that are holding on to these properties. They inherited, they bought it and for a long time. And they haven't been as sophisticated and kept those rents going up because they wanted to have low vacancies and didn't want to bother, and you know, low workload. People are willing, you know, if the rents are low, people are willing to stay for a longer time, and you have less turnover, so you have less work. So those are the properties, you know, that we're looking for to find, that we can get those rents up to market, improve those properties, because you know, obviously you have to have money to improve the property. Unfortunately, there's no magic wand available for that. So this is kind of the, you know, the dynamics of what's going on right now in the market. So, and this, these GSEs, this is nationwide. This is not just the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So this money is available nationwide.
Awesome.
So my summary for the DFW area is basically that there is more multifamily units that are going to be completed this year than were last year. So our supply is going to be high, but because of our job creation, our demand should keep pace with the supply.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as the rents going up, it's going to go up this year as well, but it's going to go up at a smaller percentage than it did last year.
Okay. And
because of that, you know, because of the supply situation, it takes a little bit of time after the supply comes on board. It takes a little bit of time for the vacancies to be filled. So our vacancies will increase slightly, but the money is going to be there. It's going to remain strong.
Awesome.
So this is kind of the dynamics. This is the outlook for 2008 for us.
Awesome.
So I'm sure what you're wondering is, well, how do I get started? Because really, this is about you. This is why you're watching this podcast, because you want to improve your situation and your financial future and not someone else do it. It's no fun when somebody else is doing it. It's got to be you. Okay. So there are six ways to get started in doing apartments. And this depends basically on your personal situation and your comfort level. What do you feel comfortable with? So the first thing you can do is simply, hey, you find an apartment complex yourself, open your mouth. Okay. Tell somebody about it, but make sure that you tell somebody that you trust.
Right.
If you tell somebody that you don't know if you trust them yet, okay, they could just say thank you and capitalize on your referral, okay? Right. Now, you may receive some blessings from above because you're such a nice person, but it's not going to help you financially.
That's right.
The next thing you can do is you can wholesale an apartment complex. Now, when I'm talking about apartments, okay, that's two units or more, okay? So you can go, duplex. Like I said, my first property was a fourplex. Now, I'm going to tell you, in my experience, the quicker you get to the bigger properties, the quicker you become more financially secure.
More units.
Because there's a lot more, yes, more units. Yes. And more units per site. Because in all of your, it's just so many different economies of scale that you can think of that just benefit you when you get bigger properties.
Right.
But you have to start somewhere. And so wherever you feel comfortable, the main thing is get your head in the game, start learning all you can about multifamily, ask every question you possibly can imagine. Now, have I ever asked a stupid question? Yes, okay? I'm the king of stupid questions. But you know what? You get to a point where if you don't understand something, ask a question, and you keep asking questions until you understand. And if people think you're stupid, that's their problem, okay? So anyway, what wholesaling is, and I'm sure you do this with single family, is you put the property under contract, and then you sell the contract to someone. You got to make sure that they can pull the trigger, okay?
Right.
Because when you put a property under contract with multifamily, okay, your earnest money deposit is going to be substantially larger than an earnest money deposit for a single family. So you're going to have more on the line. Okay, so you need to know who is out there actually buying multifamily properties, and will they be willing to pay a wholesaling fee? And I think you need to find the seller, you need to find the buyers before you find the properties, okay? Because you need to know, well, what area are you investing in? You know, where is your market? Because if you're looking for something, you find something in South Dallas, they're not looking in South Dallas. You're not going to be able to bring the two. You're not going to be able to sell the contract.
Right.
The next thing, and this is where I started, buy and hold, self-manage. So I didn't know what I was doing. Okay. And I didn't know that I didn't know. I just knew that, you know what? I'm going to jump in and I'm just going to put my feet in the fire and I'm just going to go for it because you know what? I got nothing to lose.
That's right.
Okay. $12 an hour. I got nothing to lose. So.
I think most people that's hungry, you know, and I'm glad you shared that because, a lot of the listeners need to hear. A lot of people try to learn everything and they still don't pull the trigger or take action or do what they need to do to at least get in the game. So I think that's huge for people to understand and for you to share. And I've shared this a number of times on my podcast. You just have to take action. And you learn a lot, but go ahead.
And the bottom line is your first property is the worst. You're going to just freak out. I mean, once you start buying these, it's not as big a deal because you kind of get an idea of what to expect. But that first property is just crazy scary.
Yes.
So I started in buy and hold. Now, if I could have done a bird dog and I found a property and I was able to provide the specific information that an investor needs to buy it, that's a low risk opportunity because you're not putting up any of your own money. Maybe you don't have any of your own money. So a bird dog is a good thing. And how do you find people that buy multifamily? Well, you attend multifamily events and you get to know who these people are because the bottom line is when, you always see the same people, okay? It's a very small group of people and it's just amazing that it doesn't change much. Then this is the smart person's, if they hire the proper manager, this is the buy and hold is a lot less headache if you have a really good manager. But this will be the fourth way to get started in apartments. But again, hiring a manager still takes a lot of your time because you have to watch them. You have to make sure that they don't get lazy.
Right.
And then you have the buy and flip where you force the appreciation. This is one of my favorite, and I'm going to show you how we're doing this right now. But again, you know, this is going to, in order to force appreciation, you've got to have money. Mm-hmm. So this would be more of an advanced technique.
Okay.
But then you have, in my opinion, number six is the smartest way you could ever invest in multifamily. Because this does not involve tenants' toilets or trash.
Okay. Right.
And I'm telling you, every once in a while, I get a flashback. Last week, I had my knee pads on, and I was showing my son how to lay carpet. I'm 55 years old. I was feeling it the next day. Okay. but I learned how to lay carpet, and I just wanted to show my son how to do it. We had a Section 8 lady that, they had her annual inspection. It failed. They told me, hey, look, you need to fix this carpet. We're going to replace it. So we installed new carpet for her, showed my son how to do it because I never, ever, 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 ever want to do it again. Okay. So right now I'm all about showing other people how to do the work so I don't have to do it anymore.
Absolutely.
But, investing in a syndication means that other people do the work. And all you need to do is basically your money is working for you.
Yes.
And to me, that's the smartest way of doing it. You just need to know who the management company is. Again, it's all about the management.
Yes.
So those are the six ways to get started in apartments. Now, what does, if you wanted to be a bird dog or be a wholesaler, what are you going to need to provide for the investor? So someone like me, if I'm looking to buy a property and I'm looking in a certain area, you know what my area is, you kind of know what my comfort zone is. Am I interested in 100 units? Am I interested in fourplexes? You know, where's my comfort zone? You got to know who your buyers are. First thing I'm going to need is a sales package. The sales package has to include the sales price. Okay. There are a lot of sales packages that says market on there. So whatever the market is, well, that in and of itself is a whole negotiating process.
Right.
It just helps me to be able to, it helps me to be able to analyze deals faster if I have a sales price. Now, if it says market, the best thing to do, if you're getting this sales package from a broker, the best thing to do is ask the broker, what is their price point? Okay. What is the seller's price point per unit on this deal? Is it $30,000 a door, $65,000 a door, $150,000 a door? What are they looking for? And sometimes they'll tell you and sometimes they won't. But always ask that question. What is the seller's price point? Number two, I need to know what the unit mix is. So how many one bedrooms, two bedrooms, studios, three bedrooms, four bedrooms? You know, or a studio could be, you know, also call it an efficiency. So what is the unit mix? And usually that's also in the sales package if you're dealing with a broker. So I need to know that. Why? Because normally we're looking for a 2-to-1 ratio, meaning we want twice as many two bedrooms as there are one bedrooms. We like to have a 2-to-1 ratio. Now, this property you're looking at, this picture is Hampshire Park Villas. This is the 32-unit apartment complex that we sold in Fort Worth. Okay. Isn't that just a wonderful looking place? You just want to live there, right? So we had to go in there and basically get rid of all the hookers and the drug dealers. We put in a new parking lot. So, and for some reason, the grass needs to be trimmed here. These were all one bedroom apartments.
Okay.
So normally, so we have rules for ourselves. So normally our rule is our 2-to-1 ratio. well, this property was not a 2-to-1 ratio for us. So what do we do? So we had to do a market survey of all the one bedrooms in the area to determine the market for one bedrooms in the area, which we did. And a lot of the other properties had very few one bedroom apartments. So we knew that these units could be filled. Mm-hmm. And we knew that one bedroom apartments in this area, being a blue collar area, there's a lot of people just getting started in the workforce. There's a lot of young families that want cheap rent. So we were able to take this property with 9 vacancies, and basically we went in there, we covered all the VCT tile, which is the school tile, you know, that you see in your elementary and high schools. Mm-hmm. We covered all that with a nice vinyl plank to upgrade the units. We put in newer appliances. Now this area, I felt a little nervous about putting in new appliances, mm-hmm. because they might have been donated to the neighborhood. So we put in newer used appliances here. You know, we fixed the boiler, the set of boiler, a boiler system. Mm-hmm. They all had window units. So we did end up putting in all new window units so that they had, you know, it was really nice for them. They had, and it was all bills paid property as well. So okay. We put in new window units because we wanted to keep our expenses down. So, you know, after we filled it up, you know, after 9 vacancies and you fill it up full, you automatically increase its value. And that's what we did. We forced the value and we were able to do quite well on this property. Also, so you need the sales price. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm just going to say, and whenever you force appreciation, I mean, it just opens up the
opportunity. This is how you force appreciation. Go like this.
Of course, right. I mean, it just opens up opportunities for you to, you know, you can refinance it, you can sell it if you want. It just depends on the end goal of the property, correct? But you're in it and you've instantly, well, I wouldn't say instantly, but over a short period of time that it has taken you to rehab this property, it has increased the value at that moment.
Yeah, you're spot on. So once you force the appreciation, okay, mm-hmm. you have to decide what you're going to do with your new equity.
Yes.
And like you said, you can go ahead and you can refinance this baby and you can cash out your equity and you can go and buy another property. The reason why we sold this mm-hmm. is because we didn't like the area.
Gotcha. Yep.
Okay. The area was not an area that we wanted to have a long-term hold. Mm-hmm. So because of that, we decided we're going to go in, we're going to, and we determined that before we bought the property.
Okay.
Yep. This isn't a war zone, but I would give it a C-. So okay. there's a lot of challenges in this area, and this is not an area that we wanted to hold long-term.
Okay.
So that's something that you have to decide when you go into a deal. And when we're talking about a passive investment, we check out the neighborhood. You know, we're pounding the pavement. We're talking to the police. Mm-hmm. You know, I've managed a 60-unit apartment complex when someone had to have a notice served, you know, like either a warrant or even like child support. There were 10 officers there delivering that notice. That's how dangerous the area was.
Right.
So you don't want to hold a property in those areas. You want to buy, you can buy in those areas, but you want to fix it up and you want to flip it to someone who's already in that area, feels comfortable in that area, and is holding property in that area. So that is, you know, it's an opportunity. So get me the sales price, get me the unit mix, and then I need a T12, or the trailing 12 months of the income and expenses. So I want to see for the last 12 months of this property, what was all the income and what was all the expenses. Mm-hmm. I need to see that. Okay.
Yes.
Now you got to be careful. This is real life. So sometimes these numbers are fake and they look great, but they're not real. So
you taught me that.
What's that?
I said, you taught me that.
Unfortunately, not everybody is honest. You know,
yeah.
You want to give people the benefit of the doubt, of course, but you always have to check. So,
right.
These are the 4 things that we need to do a preliminary, preliminary look at a property to see if it meets kind of our criteria. But after we actually get in and start doing the due diligence, we look at receipts. We look at invoices.
Right.
Actual invoices. We call utility companies. We don't, take things for granted. So I need a T12 and I need a rent roll. The rent roll tells me who's living in that unit, how long they've been living in that unit, what is the square footage of their unit, how much is their rent, are they behind, and when is their lease going to be, how long is their lease and when is it going to expire? Mm-hmm. So those are the kinds of the things that you get from a rent roll. Now, if you can't remember what I'm saying, don't get discouraged, okay? I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed. It takes time to learn this stuff.
Yes.
So you can always Google it, okay? Now, I didn't have Google back in my day, but you can always Google rent roll. What the heck is a rent roll? And you'll be able to see all the different things that you need for rent roll. And obviously you can take, because you have this podcast, you've got the information right here. Normally I'd be taking copious notes, writing pages and pages and pages. But you don't have to do that anymore. So this is a little easier. This is easier for you. So no excuses.
No excuses.
So these are the four things. These are the four things that I need before I can look at a property. If you call me and say, "Hey Scott, I got this great deal," I'm gonna say, "Okay, send me the sales package, send me the T12, and send me a rent roll." Well, what the heck is that? Well, Google it, and then get back with me. Okay. So here's our property that we're doing right now. This is Stone Creek Apartments in East Dallas, in a tertiary market. It's actually in Carroll, which is 32 miles from downtown, from the epicenter of Dallas. This is a 116-unit apartment complex. This was a really difficult property because it needed so much rehab. The flip side is, because of the amount of rehab that it needed and because of the area that it's in, we were confident that we could take this property from a C property and rehab it into a B property.
Yeah.
Meaning that we can raise the rents a lot higher because our rental dynamic, our prospective residents are going to be in the white collar and blue collar, We'll be getting white collar and blue collar jobs. So that's kind of the two-edged sword. It's a lot of money, but it's going to make it even worth more.
Right.
It's located in a quiet neighborhood right across the street from a golf course and, low crime. Now, when I say low crime, I want to tell you, this is Texas. Okay. Anything can happen at any time to anybody. And that's probably the way it is in the United States. So when I say low crime, I always have a disclaimer. In the past it's been low, but we have no idea what the future is going to bring. But in this area, you look at all the houses around the area, they're all nice $200,000-$300,000 houses, which is, in Texas, that's a nice house. Okay. In California, that'd be a shanty, that'd be an outhouse. Okay.
Right.
But here, $200,000-$300,000 houses, that's in the upper echelon. They're nice houses. And it's across the street, so it's a nice area. So we want this. If we're going to hold a property for long term, we want it to be in a nicer area. A couple miles away, also in this area, in Carroll, along the I-20 corridor, there's a 255-acre development that's going in right now. And what's really crazy is a year ago, they built what is called a Buc-ee's. Now, if you're not from Texas or you don't know what the heck a Buc-ee's is,
you don't know what it
a
is.
Buc-ee's would be, it's a gas, it's a convenience store gas station that sells
everything.
Every Texan knickknack you could ever think of.
Right.
They have 80 pumps. So they started building this thing and there was nothing around this. There's nothing around this Buc-ee's, nothing. And I'm thinking, okay, that's cool. They're just going to capitalize on all of the semis coming up and down this road. Mm-hmm. After they finished it, I see this sign. It says, "No semis." They build 80 pumps out in the middle of freaking nowhere,
yep.
And they don't want semis to fill up with gas?
Yep.
That place is always full.
Yep.
I mean, you drive in there to get gas and you have to wait.
Yep.
It is the highest grossing Buc-ee's, as far as the city official that I talked to last week, it's the highest grossing Buc-ee's in the state, if not in Buc-ee's.
I'm not surprised. So, let me say this, Scott. Whenever I go to East Texas to visit family, guess where I stop when I'm headed back to Fort Worth?
Buc-ee's.
Yeah,
I mean, I used to go to QT all the time because mm-hmm. they always have great prices, and you know. But now I go to Buc-ee's.
Yep.
It's just more convenient. It's right off the street. But so right next to Buc-ee's, they built a Starbucks, they built a Whataburger, they built Panda Express, they built a Freddy's, they built a hotel. There's a hotel, Holiday Inn maybe, just in this area, just in the last year. So bottom line is,
growth.
Stuff is going in.
Yes.
And you got to take advantage. You know, you got to be able to see what's going on in the neighborhood, because your number one concern and your number one consideration is, can I fill this property?
Right.
Can I make sure that there are no vacancies? Because I don't like vacancies. That's how I make my money. Can I fill this place up? So that's what we have to determine when we look at the area.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is a reposition opportunity. So we can take this from a C property, turn it into a B property, and really go gung-ho on the rent.
Yes.
So this is Stone Creek. This is what we're working on right now. We are actually going to create a private placement, a syndication for this property. However, we had a fire. So right now, while we're working with the insurance company with the claim, it's going to take 6 to 8 months before we're able to rebuild this eightplex that was burned. So, you know,
and nobody was
obviously
hurt.
We can't.
I want to say that. Nobody was hurt.
No one was hurt. It was a 14-year-old boy who was playing with fire. Eight people lost their belongings.
Wow.
We were able to contact a couple of the churches in the area that actually gave out Walmart gift cards so they could go and buy, you know, necessities. And we were also able to, of the eight people that had to move out, we were able to find, we had some vacancies that were in the process of getting them done. We had people that were waiting to move in. We contacted them, said, hey, can you wait? And we were able to move four people into other units. So
awesome. That's great.
I've been involved in probably eight fires in my career.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's ever been hurt, thank goodness.
Yes.
We're going to get a new building out of it. So again, the property value will go up. Of course, the two-edged sword is our insurance will also go up. But
well, that's
just, you know.
I think it's important for listeners to know. I'm so glad you shared that, you know, because it's real. You know, either if you're dealing with multifamily, you're dealing with single family, you know, you're going to have these things happen. But the thing is, when you're working with a team, with multifamily, and especially someone such as yourself, Scott, you have everything covered from the insurance, you know, from everything that's necessary to make sure everything's in place in the event something like this happens.
Yeah, this is definitely real world where mm-hmm. rubber meets the road.
Right.
And you have to be prepared. You know, this is all about risk and reward, and you want to minimize your risk and you want to maximize your reward. And you know, that's why we have, you know, insurance and other things in place to take care of that.
Absolutely.
And the interesting thing is the kid that was playing with fire, it wasn't even his unit that he burned down. He burned down, you know, his yeah. friend's unit. So.
Well, I wonder if they're friends.
So this is. Definitely. Yeah, I wonder if they're still friends. But, you know, kids are kids, and it's just, it is what it is. The most important thing is that we deal with it and we help them where we can help with them. I mean, the night of the fire, we had the Red Cross there. You know, everyone had a place to go that night because the Red Cross said, well, we can pay for everyone for a couple of two or three days to get them back on their feet. So, you know, all of these contingencies, you know, that's just part of the management. You have that in place. The nice thing about doing this passively is you're not going to get woken up. You're not going to get the phone call. Okay. Mm-hmm. they're not going to get the phone call that the toilet overflowed and they have another toilet they can use, but they just wanted to call you at midnight because that one overflowed and they didn't know how to turn off the water. They kept flushing it because, you know, that's not going down. It's not going down. Well, stop flushing it. You know, so there's a lot of things you deal with, but hey, you know, doing it passively, you're being smart and you're letting your dollars work for you and you're not having to mess with the headache. So,
Absolutely. But
in spite of the fact that there is a headache, there's also a huge reward. So in my opinion, it's definitely well worth it.
Yes.
Well, let me show you the money. Okay. So this is why I love forced appreciation. Let's get into let's do some of this, okay? Let's get it on. So we purchased this in 2015 for $4.1 million. And I can tell you, 20 years ago when I started this business, I would have given you 4,149,800 reasons why I couldn't buy this property, okay? That I had $1, so maybe 799, okay? I had 4,149,799 reasons why I couldn't buy this property. And of course, again, there's another 1.3 million reasons why I couldn't buy this property. However, again, this is a team effort. This is not you doing it by yourself. And with a private placement, with a syndication, you can put in a little money, you can pool your money with other people and take down these bigger deals, okay? So did I need $4.1 million to buy this property? No. Why? Because Fannie Mae gave me 3.3, okay? Mm-hmm. So we purchased it 2015, we put in 1.3, we decreased the physical vacancy. Now there's two types of vacancy. There's physical vacancy and then there's economic vacancy. Economic vacancy is basically when people live in your unit and they're not paying you the rent, okay? You don't want a high economic vacancy, but the physical vacancy we were able to reduce to almost nothing.
Wow.
We increased our rent collections from $46,000 a month to $90,000 a month.
Nice.
Okay. Now remember, when you increase the income, what does that mean to the value?
Yep.
Our NOI went from pathetic, basically negative, because we had to put a lot of money in this property. Our yearly NOI right now is $593,000. Okay, what does that mean? Okay, well, let's talk about the cap rate again. The cap rate in this area is 7%. You could say it's 6.75 to 7.25. We're taking a middle figure. Okay.
Okay.
So if that property was earning me, so what price would I have to pay to get, if I earn 7% to get $593,000 a year, okay, in income, and that sales price, that value is $8,477,515. So if you take $8 million, now this is math. So if you're averse to math, just remember you take 8,477,515 times it by 0.07, and that will equal your NOI.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, what if you don't have the sales price, but you have the NOI and you have the cap rate? So you take the NOI and divide it by the cap rate, you'll get the sales price. Okay.
Got it.
Now, I don't expect you to know this right now.
Replay.
Okay.
Just replay.
It's well, you're going to need someone to actually show you, and you can get online and there's a lot of people that explain this.
Right.
But if you take the NOI, divide it by the cap rate, you'll get the sales price.
Mm-hmm.
If you take the sales price and times it by the cap rate, you'll get the NOI. And then if you have the NOI and the sales price, if you divide the NOI by the sales price, I think you'll get the cap rate. Oh, hold on. Let me check. I don't want to steer you wrong. Let me see.
I knew you were
593. Divided by 8,477,515 equals, yep. So if you take the NOI divided by the sales price, you'll get the cap rate, okay? So as long as you have two of these numbers, you'll always be able to find a third, okay? Does that make sense?
Yes.
So this property is now worth $8.4 million. So our net gain in almost 3 years has been over $3 million.
Yeah.
Now, how many deals do you need to do to be financially free? If you could take this deal down yourself, how many of these do you need? One and done.
Uno.
Okay.
And you know what?
I can count.
You know
I
what?
I can count to that.
Yeah, I can count to that. And I have to, share this. This is one of the things that I regret, and I kind of kicked myself in the tail. Not really, you know, but that I wish that I would have done probably the first 5 years of getting into real estate was digging into the multifamily earlier. But you know, things happen, didn't happen, life events happen, but you know, I'm just grateful that I've been able to connect with you and link up with you, to have these type of opportunities to, you know, to partner and also now share, you know, with you on here to share this powerful knowledge and information. So people will have an opportunity to learn it, you know, and connect with us. And we'll talk about that towards the end on working with us and partnering with us. So I wanted to share that.
Well, now is the time to make it happen.
Yes.
We wished it would happen, but now it's time to
take action.
Make it happen. I appreciate your comments for sure.
Sure.
So how do you get started in multifamily? Well, Lolita's going to share with you a link.
Yes.
And on that link, you're going to see a form, so fill it out. If you want to be contacted by someone by phone, you like to talk on the phone, it's better for you, you're old school, and then someone will call you. Just let us know that you'd like to be contacted. And then we'll, you know, we want to talk to you about your real estate goals. What kind of resources do you have available? What would you like to accomplish? What do you feel comfortable doing? And see if we can't help you take that next step. And that's really important is, you know, this is like jumping from, you know, standing at the bottom of the Empire State Building and jumping to the top. You're not going to be able to do that in a single leap unless you're Superman or Superwoman, okay? But you can bloody well climb the steps one at a time. So let's help you take that next step. What is that next step for you? We have to define what that next step is for you. And then with Lolita and my help as well, we can help you take that next step. So that's what we're here for. So, you know, click on that link that she'll give you, fill out that form, and let's make this happen.
Awesome. Scott, thank you so much. It's just been a wealth of information and knowledge that you've shared today. Very powerful. Again, guys, make sure I've gone through this with him and I've still took notes. I'm still ever learning. And refreshing as I evaluate deals. But Scott, I do want you to share one thing real quick. This is a frequently asked question that people ask me. Well, Lo, if I want to invest in a deal like this, in a partnership like this, where I'm a passive investor, what typically is like the minimum investment, you know, I would need to have available?
Okay. That depends on the price of the property.
Right.
With this 116 unit at $8 million, we would be looking for people with a minimum investment of $50,000.
Okay.
However, if you have $5,000 and you know 9 other people that have $5,000, you can form a group, and as a group, you can, you know, invest that $50,000 into, you know, into a multifamily. The lowest I've seen, the lowest investment I've seen is 25. But again, you can put together a team, your own little group, and form an entity, and that entity can invest with us.
Absolutely. Awesome. I'll leave it there because it's a lot of information that we've shared. Just like Scott said, there's going to be a link provided for you guys to click on for those of you that are interested in connecting with us and wanting to be a part of deals and opportunities like a few that you've seen that we can bring to the table. We definitely want you to fill that out and we'll reach out to you and talk to you like Scott said. But Scott,
don't wait.
Huh?
Don't wait until the gray starts creeping up. Get in now.
That's right. Take that. All right, Scott. Thank you so much. Everyone, thank you so much. Until the next episode, take action.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.